Well, welcome everybody. I have the wonderful pleasure of hosting our call today. We've sent Mark on vacation so he can do some savoring with his family. And I want to welcome you all to our call, to our August call. I want to particularly welcome our speaker, whom I'll introduce shortly, Amy Sisson from Climate Nexus. So, Amy, before you start, I would like to tell you a little bit about the people whom you will be talking to. Climate change is a big, scary topic, but our people have a way of bringing loving little details of life into their storytelling to inspire action. So that is what they do. I'm going to read a letter to the editor written by one of our volunteers that the Richmond Times-Dispatch published recently. This letter demonstrates what our volunteers do much better than I could explain. Dear editor, superhero culture is big at our house right now. My husband loves superhero movies, and the kids love the books and toys. Marvel micro pops litter our floor, and little feet leap over them as they pretend to save the day in colorful capes. I often feel like we're living partway through a superhero movie in real life. The planet is warming, the seas are rising, and our leaders are conflicted about how to address these issues. We've already been affected by climate change in Richmond with longer allergy, tick, and mosquito seasons and higher temperatures. Our family tries to do our small part with our reusable bags, bottles, and straws. And we appreciate places like Elwood Thompson's, Galaxy Diner, and others that are trying to phase out single-use plastics. But we know that much more must be done. I desperately wish a caped crusader could fly in and rescue us by capturing all the excess carbon in the atmosphere. Our volunteer in Richmond, Molly, goes on to describe some of the progress we are seeing in Congress. And then she concludes her letter suggesting that Congress, even without capes, will become the climate heroes we need. It's a beautiful letter, and I think it speaks to the way our volunteers aim for what we want, Congress stepping up and helping us to solve this big problem. So Amy, that's who you're going to be speaking to today. So it's my pleasure now to introduce to all of you Amy Sisson, who is representing Climate Nexus today. And among other things, Climate Nexus compiles stories and opinion pieces on climate. They track what deniers are trying to do. And I can tell you, Amy, that many of our people scroll through your reports every day. It is very useful, those daily feeds. So I'm going to turn it over to Amy, who is going to help us look at messaging on social media and how we as volunteers across the country can do a good job of that. So Amy, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I am so very impressed by the number of people on the line and from all of the different places around the country and internationally. So first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm so impressed with the work that you all do. I'm so glad to be here. As Ellie mentioned, I'm the digital director at Climate Nexus. We're a communications nonprofit based in New York, and just like you guys, we are very, very concerned about what's going on and think that communicating to the public, to American audiences, and to influencers and decision makers is the best way to get action to happen. So I'm really here to tell you all a little bit more about how social media can play a role in the work that you all do. So I'm going to go ahead and share my screen and walk you through a presentation, and then please feel free at any time to pop in questions into the chat, or just go ahead and interrupt me. I'm not sure if people have a way of raising their hands over the video phone, but please do, let me know. This isn't by any means comprehensive of everything social media related. I wouldn't have nearly enough time to fit that all on the call today. But I did try to pull together what I think would be most useful for you all in the work that you do. So first of all, I think the question that I'm really trying to answer for all of you is why social media? You all have such a great community already and are making huge strides in publishing LTEs and op-eds. So social media is just another tool in your toolbox. And I'm going to talk through how it can help build a community, create a conversation, and engage with influencers. So for all of you curious cats who are asking why social media is important, I like to start off with this slide. Just to illustrate what the potential reach is online. Forgive me, these stats are a little bit old, but 7.3 billion people in the world, roughly half have internet. Two-thirds of those people are on some sort of social media. And right now, Facebook on its own, just one social media channel, has 1.5 billion people. So if you think about that and how the U.S. has 300 million people in it, there are five times as many people as there are Americans that are using Facebook. In terms of the other social channels, Pew found that 6 in 10 Americans get their news from Twitter. And in this era where we are trying to educate people on, what the science actually says about climate change and not just opinions and what the actual real news is as opposed to fake news, having a presence where we can spread real news on Twitter is really important. Instagram is, I think, such a great creative way to tell stories through images and videos that is more engaging and can capture people more emotionally than just, a text post or a news article. And then LinkedIn is a place to develop thought leadership and really become an expert online. And people have been using it to promote blogs and really become, a leader in their given field. So that's a basic, what social media is, some of the different channels, how many people are available to be reached on those channels. And I'm sure many of you use some or all or one of these. But for today, I'm talking about how we can use social media to advocate for climate action. I want to talk to you all about how social media can help you build a community. As I watched everyone get introduced, it was so wonderful to see how many different communities and where you are across the country with 3 people or 5 people, being online just amplifies that and lets you reach so many more people in your neighborhood, in your extended social networks, and helps you discover who in your existing social network actually cares about the issues that you care about as well. So it goes both ways. Creating a conversation, I think, is the most important differentiator between social media and traditional media. It's social at the end of the day. You can post an article and have people reply to you. You can have people say yes or no or have a conversation with them. And that's really the true benefit, I feel, of social media and how it makes it different from just blasting a press release out into the ether or, getting news on the TV. Because you all do lobbying work, I wanted to talk about how social media can help you engage with influencers. I'm sure we're all aware that in addition to everyday citizens like you and me, social media is a tool that's used by celebrities, elected officials. The president is infamous for his use of Twitter, as well as members of the media. So establishing a social media presence and being able to reach them across those channels is just another way that you can do your lobbying work. So that said, I'm going to go into building a community unless there's any questions so far. All right. As I was doing my research to put together this presentation, I saw that there are already so many Facebook pages for all of the different chapters of CCL across the country, which is amazing. And so I want to provide, because I know that you all are already doing the work of having a Facebook page and building your following on Facebook, I wanted to give you some tips on how to further build that community. Some easy ways is make sure that you give everyone you're interacting with a good way to connect with you and your organization and your mission. So that means in the signature of your email, make sure that there's a Facebook link. When you are publishing an op-ed, you know, Amy Cisson works for Climate Nexus. You can learn more about what they're doing. Follow them on Twitter, twitter.com/Climate Nexus. When you meet someone and you hand them your business card, say, you know, an easy way to keep track of what we're doing is to follow us. We are on, we're on Facebook. This is the exact URL. We're on Twitter. This is the exact URL. It's really, you know, finding the people, making sure that everyone you interact with who you think could be a part of your community has a way to stay connected with you. Obviously, you're giving them your email and whatnot, but I think it's an easy passive way for them to continue to be following what you're doing. And then, so social media, as I said, you can find people that you aren't necessarily directly connected with, and this is more for channels that allow you to search by hashtag or whatnot, like Twitter and Instagram, but you can really connect with like-minded individuals, people who care about the same things that you all care about, by sharing content that uses hashtags strategically and looking for content that also uses the same hashtags. So things like hashtag clean energy whenever you're posting an article about it or an article about solar, just adding that hashtag allows more people to find you, and to more people who are interested in clean energy, they may start following you and join your community. You know, you can also leverage your existing followers and say, hey, share this post with someone who you think should be a clean energy champion. And that's really just getting more people into your community, not just to have followers for followers' sake, but really focusing on quality rather than quantity. Sorry, almost messed that up. So connecting with like-minded individuals to build your community. And then once you're starting to build a community, make sure that what you're posting is relevant and helpful to them. And a good guideline that I tell most organizations that I do these trainings with is this guideline, which is a misnomer because it's called the rule of thirds, where it should really just be a guideline of thirds because you can't quite, it's not a hard and fast rule by any means. But what it does is remind you that there are three basic different kinds of content that you can post on social media. And you should aim to have a good mix of all three, even if it's not in exact thirds. So the guideline of thirds, as I like to call it, means goes in first, second, and third person types of content. First person content is about me and is the stuff that I post about me and my organization. So Climate Nexus is hosting an event. Climate Nexus has this petition. Climate Nexus is doing these things. That should only be about a third of your content. It's really easy for organizations, for people to only talk about themselves. But nobody likes to follow someone that only talks about themselves. Nobody likes to be friends with anyone who just talks solely about themselves. So, you know, that's, sorry, going on back. Nope. There you go. Sorry. So that's trying, keeping that first person content is important because you obviously want to tell people what you're doing, what you're up to, what's important to you, but, you know, limiting that to one in every three posts. Second person content is you, right? Who's when you're speaking English, first person is I, second person is you. And that's really about engaging with your community. And we'll talk about that in the next section of creating a conversation. So we'll put a pin in that for now. Third person content is content from third parties. And that's interesting content that you see from other people. Mostly news falls into that category. It's or blog posts from other organizations or interesting photos that you've seen from, you know, a National Geographic photographer that illustrates climate change in a compelling way. It's content about your issue and what's important to you and what's important to your followers, but not necessarily produced by you. So that's a very quick overview of that rule of thirds for type of content. But I think that's something good to keep in mind as you, you know, start a Facebook page or Twitter presence and you're trying to figure out, you know, what kind of content should I put out? Should I just only, you know, our chapter is not doing anything this week. There's nothing to post. That's not true. There's always a ton of climate news. I'm sure you all, as Ali mentioned, get the Climate Nexus hot news newsletter every morning. So there's a ton of climate news. There's always a lot of information out there. So the second person type of content, as I mentioned, is all about engagement. And that's really this whole section on creating a conversation. Creating a conversation really just reminds you that social media is called social media because it's social. It's not a place where you have your message and you just blast it out consistently. Which you can do, but what's more interesting about social media is the fact that you can put your content out there and then people can reply to you. They can validate you by retweeting you or commenting or liking, or they can be a troll and respond to you in really unpleasant ways. What you want to do is to be able to create moments for your following so that they can engage with you, so they can have that conversation with you. So they're not just, you know, seeing your post on Facebook and scrolling right past it. Some easy ways to engage your audience are, you know, asking a question or setting up a poll. Both Facebook and Twitter have poll functions. And it's really a good way to get people talking and starting to say, think more deeply about, you know, what you're asking or, you know, feel more involved in your mission. So, you know, how are you dealing with extreme heat this summer? If you're posting, you know, about the climate change links to extreme heat. Another easy way is to share other people's content. So that's, retweeting or quote tweeting someone on Twitter, sharing a Facebook post from another account or another or one of your followers, really, you know, putting in the work to look at what other people are saying and, you know, being a good community member for them and retweeting them or sharing their posts as a way to amplify what they're doing also, or, you know, validating that, you know, you agree. Encouraging your followers to participate. It's easy to post a news article and say, you know, oh, this is great news. But getting your followers to be more actively involved can just take a few nudges, like posting something with a caption like, you know, share if you agree this is great news. And then getting them to share your content that way. Also, you know, for both in-person events, such as a training like this, or for online events, like if you're doing a petition drive or a fundraising drive, Creating a Facebook event page is a really good way to get your community involved to see a specific thing you're doing. They might miss, you know, a post if you're posting, you know, like this event is happening. But if you have an event page, it's something that you can drive people to. You can send people, you can email people about an event and make sure that they RSVP on the event page. And that's just getting them more involved with what you're doing offline and online. So connecting those two worlds. I'm seeing that I'm getting chats, but I'm not quite sure how to.
So, Amy, we'll pull out the chat questions for you towards the end. So you can go ahead and just wrap up, finish your presentation and we'll consolidate them for you.
Okay. Sorry. I'm getting oh, there's alerts, but I'm hoping I'm not skipping over anything for anyone.
No, you're fine.
All right. The last bit I want to talk about is engaging with influencers. Hold on 1 second. Sorry. As engaging with influencers, because I know that, you know, Grasstop's outreach and lobbying is our priorities for CCL overall. I think that I'm not sure how many people really think of social media as the most effective way to do lobbying or Grasstop's outreach, but I think it is a good supplement to what you're already doing in real life and through other forms of communication. And it's helpful for really quick responses to things. So in terms of engaging with influencers, figure out who they are, first of all, because more likely than not, they are online. I'm originally from Northern California, so you have my Congresswoman Barbara Lee and my Senator Kamala Harris's page up in front of you on Twitter and Facebook respectively. They actually both have presences on both Facebook and Twitter. And they do use it on a regular basis. So there's a lot of, so everyone from senators, members of Congress, state officials, and even members of the media. So if you have a local journalist that you follow and that you've been trying to send a story to, or if there's local journalists that write about climate often, find them, make sure that you're following them first and foremost. And then, you know, when it's applicable and when you are, and to supplement, and I want to emphasize that this is supplementary to other work that you're doing. You can send them messages online. If you are hosting a lobby day and you're going to the state capitol, at messaging everyone that you're about to meet with or posting, saying things like, oh, excited for our lobby day and to talk to at Rep. Barbara Lee about climate change issues. They have staff that check their social media as well as, you know, their mail and their email. So just being out there and engaging with them. It's also really good to thank people for good work that they do. So when there's action that they support or bills that they introduce anything that's positive, we want to make sure that we are publicly thanking them. And you can do that in other forms of communications, but it's quick and easy to get, you know, a good number of people to, if you can send all of, you know, send a basic tweet that says, you know, thank you at so-and-so for supporting XYZ, then, you know, get your whole chapter to send that exact same tweet. And it might inspire them to continue doing that kind of work because they are getting public recognition on it on social media. It might take a while for you to, say, organize a petition or an action in response to something, but social media is a really quick way to say, yeah, this news just broke, absolutely unacceptable, and then at message you know, get your chapter, get a bunch of folks to send messages to a representative on their social media channel, really quick and easy, cut and paste, sent directly to them on social media, you know, in the time that it would take to, you know, circulate a petition and get a lot of people to sign up. So for really rapid response things, that's another way, or that's another time that, you know, social media should come to mind as a way to engage with these influencers. So that covers, you know, the three, you know, why social media answers I had specifically for the work that you all do. There's a lot of text on this page, but I did want to leave general tips on how to manage a social media presence for all of you who are doing that for your chapters and for the and other organizations. You know, they're, I can run through them quickly, but definitely do read through them afterwards. I'll have the deck will get sent around. You know, these are just basically quick tips on how best to manage a social media presence. So does anyone have any questions? I know I talked through a lot of stuff. I know there's a lot in there, but definitely please let me know.
Awesome. Thank you, Amy. Thank you so much. We're going to open it up for questions. Ricky's going to help us with that. First, though, I want to say just this is terrific. I can really see how the way you guys approach your communication is very similar to the way we've been approaching our one-on-one relationship building. And when I heard you describe the first person, second person, and third person, that's almost like a CCL lobby meeting where we introduce ourselves and someone shares their personal story. Then we ask something of the person we're meeting with, the member of Congress or staff person. We do what we call motivational interviewing and pull out from them some of their thinking. And then when we bring those leader letters in, that's the third person. Well, wouldn't you like to know that this local person really wants you as a congressperson to lead on this? So it was just so beautiful to see our work mirroring in your work and just alignment there for sure.
Yeah, that's so great. I love that. And I love that that's a structure that you all already use and are familiar with. So I think that should be, you know, a pretty easy transition from those lobby meetings into managing a social media presence.
Very good. All right, Ricky, can you give us some of the questions from the chat?
Yeah, so I'm just summarizing a couple that I've been chatted privately here. A lot of chapters or a couple chapters have asked about, you know, what are some creative ways that you've seen that people, you know, use a question or a poll to get people involved and to start that engagement piece that you talked about. And then the flip side of that is also how do you handle the negative comments that you might get as well? So what are some strategies around those two things?
Yeah. So there's a lot of creative ways I think that you can ask a question. And I think that something that I want to let everyone know, like to start off with is that, you know, when you're still starting off your community, you know, the levels of engagement will be different. Sometimes you'll have people who follow you who are really enthusiastic to comment all the time. Or sometimes, you know, just getting a like is a win in terms of engagement. So, you know, judging based on what your experience is with how engaged your community is overall, starting them off with something small. So, you know, like this post if you are very concerned about the wildfires in California or something to that effect. And then building but if you have a more engaged audience that's willing to have the conversation with you or submit to a poll, I think putting humor into it would be, is something that is fun and interesting that I've seen other organizations do. So, you know, if you put a poll together on, you know, what do you think is the most effective way to, combat climate change, and putting in, which is a really open-ended answer, but, you know, giving a poll of, you know, getting people together to unite for action, setting a carbon price, building a time machine so we can turn back time and figure it out that way. getting creative with the responses that you put to open-ended questions in polls like that, I think is really fun and interesting and gives people, makes a very serious issue for people, a little more lighthearted and a little bit more relatable. And in terms of engaging with negative people, I think there's two types of negative feedback that I've seen in the almost 4 years that I've been managing the Climate Nexus presence. And they fall into two categories. One are the outright deniers and trolls. That's best to just ignore them. I didn't include it in this deck, but what I always do for at least Facebook is in the about section of the page, put community guidelines that say that basically give you the ability to say, on this Facebook page, we don't tolerate trolling behavior. We don't tolerate foul language or personal attacks. So that if someone does any of those three things in your comment section, you have the right to delete the comment and block the person from your page. So that's for the trolls and really outright deniers. But there's like there's a different group of people who are who I like to call skeptics, people who, sometimes people come in as skeptics and end up to just be trolls, so then you can delete them anyway. But sometimes people are really asking questions like, how do you know that this particular wildfire was caused by climate change? I like to look at those moments as teaching moments and say, and replying to them and saying, here's a news article that covers that, or here's a resource from Climate Central or Climate Nexus or NASA that explains the link between climate change and wildfires. So I think figuring out what type of negative comment it is first, and if you see it as a teachable moment, then let's use it. Let's use it to turn that skeptic into an ally. And if you reply to them with additional education materials and they turn out to be trolls, then go ahead and delete the comments and block them.
Oh, awesome. Well, Amy, we could certainly sit here all afternoon and ask you more questions, but I know you probably have to go and we've got some more to cover too. So if Brett hasn't already talked to you, and he may have, about coming back to speak with us, we'll get that lined up. And I want to thank you so much for being on this call and getting us thinking about social media. So
thank you so much. I saw that there were a lot more questions in the chat, so if someone wants to send those over, I can answer all of them by email. And I'll connect with Brett about doing a follow-up call. Thank you all so much for having me. I hope this was helpful.
You're welcome. Thank you. And feel free to stick around, or if you need to get on with the rest of your day, we understand. We're going to cover some of our successes and our action items for the month. All right. So next, I want to ask our DC office, Ben Pendergrass, if he would come on. We've got some explaining and information to share about the Curbelo bill and the Scalise resolution. So Ben, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Good afternoon, everybody. Let me share my screen. I wanted to talk just briefly, kind of give a 30,000-foot overview of a bill you might have realized was introduced. It was a carbon pricing bill introduced several weeks ago called, I love reading this full title because it's a doozy, The Modernizing America with Rebuilding to Kickstart the Economy of the 21st Century with a Historic Infrastructure-Centered Expansion Act, our Market Choice Act. It was introduced by Representative Carlos Curbelo, along with Brian Fitzpatrick, and Francis Rooney joined the bill several days after it was introduced. Well, what does it do? The Market Choice Act would replace the current gas tax with a $24 per metric ton rate carbon price on CO2. It would increase 2% a year plus inflation. And similar to our proposal, it would be assessed upstream at the coal mine, at the refinery, at the port of entry. Where does the revenue go? Well, 75% goes to something called the RISE Trust Fund, and 25% goes to the general fund. From the RISE Trust Fund, 70% would go to the Highway Trust Fund, 10% would go to states as block grants to help low-income households deal with increased fuel and energy costs. 5% would go to mitigation and adaptation projects, mostly for like coastal flooding and things like that. And the rest of the revenue would go to about 14 different programs, most of which are research and development things, funding for energy storage research, carbon capture, direct air capture, those sorts of programs. The bill also includes a border adjustment similar to our proposal. It would impose this on fossil fuels coming into the country as well as carbon-intensive products. Exporters would receive a rebate. It does place the price on CO2 equivalents such as methane and nitrous oxide. There are exemptions to the bill. It would provide refund credits for carbon capture and sequestration and the use of non-emitting fuels. It does include a rolling moratorium on new Clean Air Act regulations, so it would put a stop to anything like a clean power plan, so long as certain emissions targets are hit. And we've gotten a lot of questions. How do we respond to this? Well, first of all, this is a major, major stepping stone towards having a more robust discussion about carbon pricing. This is a carbon price, and Representative Curbelo and Fitzpatrick and Rooney should certainly be praised for their courage in introducing this bill, because it is the first carbon pricing bill introduced by a Republican in over 10 years. That said, it is an infrastructure bill. It's not necessarily a climate bill. The best way to think about it is it's an infrastructure bill with positive emissions reductions, and we still believe it doesn't negate the need for a carbon fee and dividend bill to be introduced that has a more aggressive carbon price and returns that revenue in the form of dividend. But it does certainly add to the conversation, and those Republican representatives should get as much positive feedback as we can give them on taking this first step. And I can also say with great certainty that the space for them to introduce this bill would not exist if it wasn't for the work of all the CCL volunteers out there. You guys have created this space for them to start having this conversation about carbon pricing. Oh, let me share my screen. I also wanted to talk a little bit about the Scalise resolution that was voted on several weeks ago. Congressman Scalise introduced a non-binding resolution that it's the sense of Congress that a carbon tax would be bad for the American economy. And we asked everybody to reach out to their members to oppose this resolution. And however, it did pass. But we view it as a great victory almost, because we believed here in D.C. that if 10 Republicans voted against the resolution, the last time it was brought to vote 2 years ago, every Republican voted for the resolution. This time, 6 Republicans voted against it, 1 Republican voted present, and several just skipped the vote. And we know some of those that skipped the vote skipped it because they didn't want to take the vote. They didn't want to vote for it. And we really viewed if 10 Republicans did not vote for the resolution, that would be a major victory in the conversation about having a price on carbon. I know it can be discouraging because it doesn't seem like a big number, but for the Scalise resolution to be an effective messaging tool for those that oppose action, it really needed to be unanimous support from one party. And the best way to think about it is these are the cracks in the dam. This is the pressure building, and we're seeing those fissures of outright opposition cracking. And this is a good sign, even more so we know we've heard from several offices that don't think the Scalise resolution is relevant to what we're talking about, because a revenue neutral price on carbon, they don't view as a carbon tax. So they don't view this as having any impact on our bill. And we have heard from several members have reached out to their volunteers in their district explaining their vote, and that they don't think their vote really impacts us. And so that is something that didn't happen before. And a lot of members have expressed that they don't think trying to shut down the conversation this way is helpful, even if they voted for the resolution. They think it's non-binding, and they are happy to continue that dialogue with us. So these are two very positive developments that I think CCL can really, really celebrate.
Awesome, Ben. I love that. We're taking some ground, and it's so delicious. So thank you for that report. And I want to move along here. Hearing Ben's report gives me more appetite for taking more ground, most specifically the 52 congressional districts we don't yet have chapters in. We want to grow groups in those districts. So last month, we introduced our group development coach program focused on starting chapters in those areas and expanding the number of chapters and the strength of our chapters in existing areas where we do have chapters. We have 37 volunteers who have signed up to be coaches in the group development coach. And we are finding out that we are having more fun than we thought we would have. And once we get a committee of local volunteers formed to work with that coach to host a CCL Climate Advocate training workshop, we are meeting with great success in pulling that together. It's easier than we had imagined. So for example, Hendersonville, North Carolina, y'all had 37 people attend the Climate Advocate training there using the host committee, having a coach work with the host committee. And then last week, Greenville, South Carolina, again, a host committee with a coach working with them, had 31 at the Climate Advocate training workshop. And Bob Inglis, former representative from South Carolina, popped in to kick off the workshop. So I'm extending an invitation. If you feel well-grounded in your CCL chapter and you think you'd have fun working with me as a coach to help launch other chapters, please reach out to me. My email is ellie@citizensclimate.org. At some point, we want Ben or Danny on the call giving us a report about a bill, and we know we'll get that bill when we have groups in every district activating all those levers of political will. All right, so on to actions. This month for the U.S., we're focused on storytelling. Isn't that delicious? So number one, craft your personal story. Number two, practice telling your story to friends, your CCL story. And number three, start sharing your story with your community. So here's my story, or one version of it. 10 years ago, I planted a big garden in my urban backyard in Richmond, Virginia. Lettuce, cucumbers, carrots, and tomatoes. And the tomatoes flowered beautifully, but not one single blossom transformed into a tomato. So I did some research and discovered that hot Virginia days are good for tomatoes only when paired with relatively cool nights. And I also learned that hot nights are a symptom of man-made climate change. My tomatoes and me, we were suffering climate change. I now understood the problem, but what to do? That's when Paul Thompson from Minnesota introduced me to Citizens Climate Lobby and Carbon Fee and Dividend. I joined CCL for the ride of my life. Each time more of you join up with me, I see our gentle, persistent, determined, tomato-inspired power growing. So that's my story. And if y'all craft your own stories and want to share them with me, I'm a story collector, so you certainly can. It's not required. Canada, submit a lot of letters to the editor up there in Canada. Invite people to your national conference, your CCL National Conference, October 13th through the 16th. Register for yourself and invite others to come. And provide feedback on CCL Canada's updated national policy proposal. So those are our actions for the month of August till our next meeting in September. I want to welcome some new groups. So in the U.S., we have Parker, Castle Rock, Colorado. Welcome. Corrales, Westside, New Mexico, and Greenville, South Carolina. Welcome to all of you. We have two international groups I want to tell you about. Freetown, Sierra Leone, and Faisalabad, Pakistan, my friends. Can you believe that? Welcome, Pakistan. All right, so a little news about some endorsements we're getting. So last month, we recognized that the Presbyterian Church USA endorsed Carbon Fee and Dividend. On July 13th, 2018, the resolution Carbon Tax CO20 passed on the consent agenda of the 79th meeting of the U.S. Episcopal Church with 842 yes votes and only one no vote. So thank you, Emily Hopkins, from our Contra Costa, California chapter for keeping after this until you succeeded. Now, municipal resolutions. We get more and more coming in each month. Our current numbers stand at 102. No, wait, make that 103. Blacksburg, Virginia got a municipal climate resolution, and I want to celebrate that. Blacksburg is in the heart of Virginia's Congressional District 09, the Fighting Ninth. I have been in that congressional office. I went to four of those meetings in D.C. in my early years of volunteering with CCL. There is a chunk of coal the size of my head on the wall of Congressional District Morgan Griffith's office, and it says Friend of Coal. So to get a municipal climate resolution from coal country is just beautiful. Love you, Blacksburg. All right. Now, in addition to over 100 municipal resolutions this year, we've already had 788 meetings with congressional offices and 1,808 letters to the editor. So that letter to the editor from Richmond, Virginia that I read at the beginning of the meeting has had 1,807 other friends getting published on other newspapers across the continent. So very nice work, friends. Very good work. All right, so we're here at the end of the meeting, and Ricky, I'm going to ask you if you would do that beautiful kiss cam thing where people get to wave to us goodbye. Thank you all for your work, and let's turn on the kiss cam.
Everybody, meeting.
Bye. 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 Bye.